good morning, Marion. Well, it's not morning anymore, is it? It's 14 minutes past quarter after 12. How about that? You're listening to Glenn Coble, and the program's called A Progressive Life. We're hoping that we will have Ed McCants on today. He was intending to run for the mayor, mayor's position here in town, and then apparently was unable to do that. And so I had already invited him to come on the show, so I looked him up, and Ed's quite an unusual young man. He's 6'3". He played basketball at Marion Catholic, and then went on to really further his career at the college level and also into semi-pro level. And really, we have a lot in common. I hope he's able to make it because we have so much in common. Well, actually, I'm only, 40 years older than him. But what I have in common is I have a son who is also an All-American basketball player and All-American baseball player. But he was an All-State baseball and basketball player. One of the neat things Andrew is proud to tell people that, now, you know, the All-State teams are honorary. You don't really play with a team. You're put on a team. And Andrew was on the same. Andrew was a senior, and LeBron was a freshman, but they were on the same team. So I was pretty proud of that. And I think Andrew's pretty proud of that. As a matter of fact, we went out to California a few weeks back, and went and watched him play ball. He's still playing ball at 37, I think he is. Might be 38. Anyway, he's still playing ball, and probably one of the better players in the league. He's not tall. He's only 5'11". He used to hate his older brother because his older brother got the height genes in the family. He's 6'3", and Andrew did not. But Andrew didn't need the height gene. He could dunk when he was in high school. He had some good hops. But anyway, when we were out there, it was interesting how even the referee, the referee in the game came over to us. We were watching Andrew play and said, "Is it true that your son was on the same basketball team with LeBron James?" We had to point out, no, he wasn't on the same team, but they were both elected to All-State status the same year. And LeBron, I think, was a All-State status for the whole time he was in high school. Andrew only made it as a senior. But anyway, kind of interesting stuff. We had a great interview this morning with Sheriff Bailey, and you'll notice on our website that he did make his announcement right here on WWGH. He made his announcement that he's going to run for another term, and we're wishing him luck. It's getting closer and closer to that season, and I'm going to try to have on as many politicians as I can, having come from that world. I know how important it is to the politicians to have publicity about them run where the general public can learn more about them and get to feel good or bad about them and their positions. And so we're going to try to have them on. I'm not going to give them any gotcha questions. I'm just going to ask them straight up questions and ask them, you know, what they plan to do for Marion County or Marion City or whatever they're running for or the district. And we might have Mike Larson back on again. Mike is running for the position that I ran for last term. He hasn't announced, I guess, so he's thinking about running for state representative in the 67th, I think it's 67th district. How soon we forget. That was quite an interesting, I guess, 8 months. I got to meet an awful lot of people. I had no knowledge of Union County, and I had plenty of knowledge about Marion County, having lived here since 2004. But I had very little knowledge of Union County, and I really met a lot of good people down in Union County. Talked to a lot of farmers. I would venture to say that most of the farmers did not vote for me. At the time, they were still assuming that Mr. Trump was going to do good for them. Since then, I've talked to some others that have taken a front to all the different things that have happened that have caused their business to go downhill. All the different, and now I can't remember what the term is. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Two nights ago, I think it was, my son just bought a new house down in Worthington. So my wife and I drove down to Worthington. And on 23, for a long, long time, there was a sign out front of this person's house that said Trump. And my wife and I would go by and kind of give the raspberries as we go by. Not that we cared one way or the other. He had every right in the world to have that sign up front, but he left it up for a long, long time. And as we drove by two nights ago, we noticed it had been taken down. I don't know why, but my guess is maybe he had become a little disenchanted with where we were going. Lots and lots and lots of discussion this week about administration, with Mr. Bolton quitting or being fired. We're not quite sure which. Mr. Bolton says he resigned, offered his resignation, and the president says he got fired. I think that's yet to be told, and I have no doubts in the world, no doubts at all, that the president will deny whatever Mr. Bolton says. That's one of the things. I talked to Sheriff Bailey this morning just briefly as he was leaving, and pointed out that I was not running anymore, and he apparently realized who I was and that I had run. And we both agreed that running for office is not the most enjoyable thing in the world. I did enjoy meeting the people, and I did enjoy going door to door and knocking on doors and shaking hands, but it's a lot of work. I'll guarantee you it's a young man's job, but mostly run by old men or old women, mostly old men even still, especially on the Republican side of the aisle. I did a count one time of how many old white guys were in the Republican Party, and I think there were only 8 people that were representatives of the Republican Party. Only 8 of this, several dozen, were other than older white guys. Whereas the Democratic Party was pretty diverse. I'm not sure whether there are more women or more men running for positions in the Democratic Party for state representative. It's a job I would have loved to have had. It truly is, and I think I would have done a very good job at it. Obviously, those of you who had the opportunity to vote for me, there weren't enough of you. But that's all right. I think my wife is happier that I didn't win. she didn't like the fact. It had gotten back like the good old days when I was in athletics, where I was gone all the time. And I was gone an awful lot. I'd drive down to Dublin and shake hands, and then I'd drive over to Richwood and shake hands with people, and then I'd have a neighborhood in Marion that I'd have to go and shake hands and hand out literature, and then I'd have to go put signs in. It's a never-ending chore while you're running for the office. However, I would not trade the opportunity and the experience for anything else. The opportunity to go out and talk to people, especially if you're really convicted in the way you believe the country and the state and the city and the district should be run, you can tell people. And I imagine there are people, politicians, that don't like to do it because then they get in fights with people. I never got in fights with anybody. I had one person throw me out of their house. and the reason there is I walked up and knocked on the door. I heard somebody holler at me. So I knocked again, and he came to the door and he says, "Can't you read a sign?" And I didn't know what sign he was talking about. Well, he had a ramp, because he was in a wheelchair, and I guess he thought that I should be able to understand that he didn't want to talk to me because he had to drive his wheelchair to the front door. I didn't know that, and I apologized profusely several times as I was leaving, and I really didn't mean to cause him any problems, but things like that happen, and that's kind of... It's a little depressing when you mess somebody's day up, and I obviously messed his day up. Now, his day may have been messed up earlier, and I just added to the cause, but I did feel really bad about that. But in most cases, even when I would go up and I knew the people were either independent or Republican and weren't going to be terribly interested in what I had, most people, I would say... 95% of the people that I walked up onto that answered their door, there were a lot of people that didn't answer the door, but the people that answered the door were very cordial, very friendly, would listen to me. My speech was very, very short. I just introduced them, told them what I was running for, the party I was running for, and basically, do you have any questions? And most people didn't ask questions, but the ones that did ask questions, I tried to give them an answer, straightforward. I absolutely promised myself I would never lie to anybody while I was doing that, and I can tell you I never did lie to anybody, and there were people that disagreed with me, and I'm glad they were able to disagree with me, because that's what democracy is all about. That's all of us telling each other what we like and what we don't like. I am a little concerned now that we don't seem to have an understanding that people that disagree with us could also have a legitimate point. We've gotten to the point where if you're not on my team, I'm not going to talk to you, and you're definitely wrong. And I hate to see that, because I've learned more from people telling me that I was wrong about something than I have from people absolutely smiling and agreeing with me. And quite often when they're smiling and agreeing, they probably don't really totally agree with you. But that's the cool thing about running for office. And I'm proud that I ran for office too. I ran earlier for township trustee. I did not win that one either. Let's face it, I'm not a very good politician. I just don't know how to raise funds. But I'm glad I did it, because at least now I can say I stepped out there and I told them what I thought, and I had the courage of my convictions. I wish I had done it earlier when I was younger. I think I would have been a good politician when I was younger, because I would have had more desire. I would have worked harder to win, maybe. But anyway, I worked pretty hard, but the thought of losing did not destroy me, whereas I think there are some politicians that the thought of losing would destroy them. I guess Hillary wrote a book, or somebody wrote a book about the Hillary campaign, and it's the title is something like Crushed or something like that, where they talk about how hard she took that. And I can understand that, because I'm certain, like, I thought she was going to win. I have a feeling her staff and she thought that they were going to win as well, which is another point bring up. I think we ought to all talk about the Electoral College. I think we've gone way past needing a bunch of people that are smarter than us to vote for us. If we are a nation of democracy, I think it's one person, one vote. And right now, it no longer is one person, one vote. And the problem that we're having with all the horrendous gerrymandering that went on in, quite frankly, went on when the Republicans were in power in, 2010? That gerrymandering where 55% of the vote went one way, but the 48% of the vote won the election. That just doesn't seem right. That shouldn't be the way it's done, I don't think. And we do have rules about gerrymandering, and I'm going to try to get somebody to come in and talk to us about what is going on. We do have a law that was passed about the gerrymandering. I think it's being shoved to the back of the room and avoided at all costs right now by the Republican Party that happens to be in control of the Ohio politics right now. And I think I will try to get somebody on to talk about that, because it's kind of confusing why we have gotten to a point where one person, one vote isn't even close to what goes on. If you live in the right place and they want your vote, they will do a little lobe on the district to pull you in. I really think that that's abhorrent to the system. There's been a lot of talk about it this week on the talking heads, the political talking heads, talking about. I saw a district that looked like it was probably 100 miles long and 2 miles wide, and kind of meandered along like a river, but it really wasn't a river. It was a river in that situation. It was a river of Republicans, and they had little lobes that pulled in little spaces of Republicans. So, and I don't think, and I know a lot of people are sitting out there thinking, well, he is very one-sided. Well, right now I am, but throughout my life, as a matter of fact, I used to be a Republican, I wouldn't want the Democrats to gerrymander any district this way. And if rules are passed, and let's say the Democrats win both the Senate and the House and maybe the presidency, if they do and they start to gerrymander things in the way that they've been gerrymandered, but flip it the other way, I will be the first person on the queue to tell them I think they are making big mistakes. The only thing I think that, or the major thing that I think the Democratic Party has going for it right now, is it's a party of honesty and diversity. And both of those things are things that I'm very proud of. As an older white male, I'm kind of in the minority, I guess. I don't know if I am anymore. I've heard polls recently that the older white guys are now kind of changing their tune as more and more things come out about the corruption in this current government. And I don't think you can call it anything but corruption. The line, the avoidance of any fairness, honesty, and really having a leader that apparently wants to become a dictator or a king or something along that line, because that's kind of the people he supports in the world, and kind of what he's doing to our government. He's been enabled, and I have a lot. I've said this before, but I have a lot of Republican friends. I mean a lot of Republican friends who I would trust in any situation. But they, if they continue to support this government, I find that they are just enabling a corrupt person who I cannot understand how. And as you all know, I'm a minister's son. Even though I'm not religious, I'm not quite an atheist. I'm an agnostic. But even though I try to live my life as a non-believing Christian, if you can understand that. I believe that my friends who are so enamored with Trump, but yet claim to be total Christians, or I don't know how you can do that. I just don't understand that at all. I know he will support people that are supporting anti-abortion legislation. But if it comes down to one thing like that, you're giving up all the other things that we need to concern ourselves with. The law of the land says that it's legal for a consenting woman to have an abortion. I understand that you can try to change that, but it is the law of the land. I will be trying to change Citizens United while you're changing Roe versus Wade. And it's okay that you should. But to claim you're a religious person and support this man that's in charge of our government right now, I find very hypocritical. Anyway, I'm sorry. I should get off that soapbox. It has nothing to do with basketball, which is what I was going to talk to. Apparently, Ed was unable to make it, and that's okay. But we'll try to get him on later. I'm also going to try to get on all sorts of politicians. If you are a politician and you'd like to be on the show, just email me or text me at my Facebook, on my Facebook page, or my phone number happens to be 740-361-8721, and you're welcome to text me and tell me that you would be interested in being on the show. Hey, if you're interested in calling in today and shooting some thoughts my way, disagreeing with me or agreeing with me, or talking about the state of politics in the United States. And, you know, one of the things I keep reminding myself, I am very involved in politics because I've run for office. And my wife and I really enjoy keeping an eye on where we're going politically. But you know what? The majority of people in the United States don't really give a furry rats behind, at least yet. Now, as we get closer and closer to the election, it will be more and more important. A big debate is going to be on tonight, and as far as I'm concerned, that's only slightly more interesting than watching paint dry. I'm not a big fan of the debate system, the way they've got it working. I would rather hear an individual talk about their thoughts and then have another individual talk about their thoughts on a different time. I understand that just is doesn't work with television. This way, they all get 5 minutes and get off. But when I was running for office, I was told by the Democratic Party of Ohio that I needed to have a elevator speech. And the elevator speech should be, I think it was 30 seconds to a minute long, no longer. I just find you can't really tell people what you believe in 30 seconds. You can hit a couple of highlights and get the heck out, but nobody's going to know you in 30 seconds. I'm relatively certain that over the past 6 or 8 months, however long I've been on the air here, most of my regular listeners know where I'm coming from. Those that didn't like it have long turned the radio off, or at least turned it down. And those who like it, I get a few calls. I don't really ask for calls. I keep forgetting that I can take calls. And you are welcome to call here at, 740-383-9944. I'd be glad to take a call and we'll talk. I think most of my listeners know where I stand and either disagree with me or agree with me. And if they disagree, they might turn it off, or they might just put it in a back room and turn it down a little bit, and then when Charlie comes back on, or whoever comes on after me, turn it back up. Charlie had a lot of call-ins today. I've got, and I need to remind you people, we've got several people that haven't come in to pick up their zoo or their Wilds tickets. And those are pretty expensive tickets if you stop and think about it. And you're going to go to the zoo. You're going to spend, I think, $20, maybe $30 for two tickets. Same with the Wilds. And I think the Wilds might even be more expensive. But we've got several people, and I won't tell you how many, but it's more than one and less than a dozen. But we have a lot of people that haven't stopped by to pick up their tickets. It's easy enough to do. Our hours for pickup are Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Now, let me tell you where we are now. We're in the Ohio Health Building, which is at the corner of Prospect and Center Street on the, on the southwest corner of Prospect and Center Street. And you go in the door. It's on the west side of the building. There's a door. There's a ramp there, leading a handicap ramp there, so you can see where to go in. Go into the vestibule, and right in front of you there is an elevator, and take that elevator to the second floor and get off at the second floor, turn right, and then turn right immediately again, and at the end of the hallway, that's where WWGH is located. Now, we will always, during those hours, we will always have the door unlocked so you can get in. We do not have a receptionist. That's a little bit of money that we don't happen to have. But occasionally Scott's out there doing some business, or occasionally Charlie's sitting out there, or I'm sitting out there on somebody else's show. If there's nobody out in the vestibule or out in the hall, the outer office of the WWGH studio, the door will be open to your left, and just walk right in, even if we're on the air. But be quiet as you walk in. But walk in and wave, and we'll figure a way to make sure you get your tickets. So if you're interested and you can get here in the next 15 minutes, we've got 1, 2, 3. Well, I won't tell you how many people. I was going to mention all the people's names, I don't want to do that because I might be embarrassing you, but we have those tickets available for you today and tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. and then again next week. But you only have 10 days to collect that stuff, so if you won prior to, what is today's date? Today's date is the 12th. So if you won prior to the 2nd, is that right? Or after the 2nd, your chance of picking up the tickets are no longer available. Right now I'm looking at the list of the people that haven't picked up their tickets, and I don't see anybody prior to that, so I'm guessing we're okay as far as the date goes. But we do have a person here, two people on the 4th, so you've only got to, you got to get in tomorrow if you're going to pick up those tickets. Again, I wish all of you a good week. I know we've had a kind of a struggle this week as we've gone back over all the things that happened on 9/11 yesterday. 18 years ago yesterday, those two planes flew in the top of the World Trade Center, and the plane crashed into the Pentagon, and a plane went down in a field in Pennsylvania, being as a terrorism thing. And it did terrorize people. It succeeded in doing that. Why 18 or 19 people would want to kill themselves to frighten other people, I have no idea. I was listening this morning. Apparently there's going to be a show on television about why so many young men are involved in this type of terrorism, for lack of a better word. And it does seem kind of odd that all the, well, almost all of the people that are the shooters are young men. Very few are young women. I think I recall only one, maybe two. And one of them was doing it with a young man. So, but we have people, mass shooters, every single day of the year. And why we can't figure out that we need to do away with some of the things like the military-style guns that have a muzzle velocity of, I don't know, 4,000 feet per second or something like that. Some of these guns fire the bullets so fast that instead of going through, they just rip you to shreds. And that's the only reason why you would have a gun like that is not for hunting, because it would just tear the animal up. It's not for defense, because you don't need that much velocity for defense. It's for killing people. I absolutely know that that type of gun is one that strikes, I guess, pride into some young people, into their hearts, and even older people. I remember having to learn how to fire. When I was in the Army during the Vietnam War, the basic training, we learned how to fire both the M1, which was the old style wooden stocked weapon, which had a fairly slow muzzle velocity as compared to the M16, which had a pretty fast velocity. And that was, we learned on both weapons because they were changing over at the time. Some of the demonstrations that our drill sergeants gave us about the killing power between the two would raise the hair on the back of your neck. The M1 was a pretty powerful rifle. But the M16, with its tiny little bullet, I was always surprised at how small the actual bullet itself is. But apparently it went at such speed that it just, if they would shoot it down the firing range at a can of gasoline, and there'd be a giant explosion. Now, I'm sure that if you shoot an M1 down and it goes through a gasoline, there will be an explosion there too. But it was just stupendous, the amount of explosive power. I was going to tell you some stories about basic training a long time back when I was talking about some of the things I've done in my life. I'm going to bring this one up. It was kind of humorous. We had a young man, his name was Kolarski. And I think I mentioned the time he tried to commit suicide out of a second story window into a marsh. That didn't work, obviously. Kolarski was kind of the buffoon of the group I was in. And a lot of the, I don't know how you describe him, but a lot of the more cruel members of the group would do terrible things to him. But we were at the firing range one evening. It was right at dusk, so you could see things. And they were teaching us what they called the quick kill method. And anybody who's been in the Army probably recently, I'm not sure if they still teach it, but for a long time during Vietnam, they would teach the quick kill method. And basically, you pull the weapon up and you point your finger at what you want to shoot, and you're pretty accurate. You don't really have to aim so much as point at what you want to shoot, and while you're pointing, you pull the trigger, and it's pretty accurate. And they would teach us how to, with BB guns, they would teach us how to shoot a nickel out of the air, and you throw up a nickel, and you could hit it quite often by using the quick kill method. Well, you all had they made you wear goggles because those little BBs would fly everywhere and bounce everywhere, and they'd make you wear goggles, and you had your helmet on, so a couple of the guys in my platoon decided it would be really funny because you had lots of BBs in your gun. They thought it'd be really funny to shoot at Kolarski. I probably laughed because he made such a crazy sound and stuff like that. But I'm not proud that I did that. But they shot him. He had welts all over him from where he got hit by those BBs. Kolarski also was one of the guys. He was one of the three or four guys that was chosen, probably because of the way he acted. He was a little odd, but he was one of the three or four guys that was chosen to show people how to hold the M16 and show how little kick there was in the M16. I was one of them because I was unfortunately a platoon leader. I went up to Drill Sergeant Sims. He called me forward and he said, "Now, Coble, put this gun up against your chest and hold it snugly, and when you fire, you won't feel anything. Do not let it away from your chest." So I went up there and held it firmly and fired it, and I was absolutely shocked at how little recoil there was in that gun. Two of the other guys were also given instruction. Kolarski was supposed to hold it against his chin. And Kolarski didn't follow rules so well. And the drill sergeant gave him the same rules. He said, "Pull the gun tightly against your chin and fire, and you won't feel a thing." Well, just before he pulled the trigger, he let the butt of the weapon about an inch away from his chin. And after he came to, a terrible round of laughter went up. But after he came to, they had to put him in the camp hospital for a day, I think, because he was knocked unconscious. I wrote a one-act play about Kolarski. He was one of those people that not only do you... You kind of look at him with a smile on your face because he was so unusual, but you also kind of felt sorry for him because, well, at least I did, because people treated him badly just because, let's say he wasn't as the shiniest, the brightest bulb in the package, but he was a genuinely nice young man. Unfortunately, Kolarski was recycled, and recycling was not something you wanted to have done, except, I guess, during the Vietnam War. It held off going to Vietnam by 9 weeks, but recycling meant that you had to go through basic training all over again. and they recycled Kolarski, and he had to go back through basic training. I think he was probably not uncomfortable with that. I don't know if he ever did go to Vietnam. We did have a parade at the end of our 9-week basic training, and at the end of the parade they called us all into formation, and they would read off our MOS, which is our mode of service or something like that. I'm not sure what it is, but my MOS was special bandsman, which was not something very many people got. I was very lucky. I got to play with the United States Army Field Band. But there were kids that got what they call the 11 Bravo MOS. And for those of you who are in the Army or were in the Army, 11 Bravo means you're going into the infantry. There were several kids that would broke down when they found out that they were going into the infantry, because they knew they were going to go to Vietnam. And there were a lot of frightened young kids going to Vietnam. We were all frightened. It was a time of being afraid. I enlisted because I was offered the opportunity to play with the United States Army Field Band. So I wasn't terribly frightened, but I was frightened for my friends. And since then, probably a year ago, one of the guys I went through basic training with Facebooked me, messaged me. And it's kind of interesting to find out where he has gone since then. He made it, and he did go to Vietnam, but he was a clerk of some sort and was in Saigon most of the time. So I was happy for him. I had a friend who was in Vietnam as a cook. He was a cook. And that was kind of an interesting story, too. He tells the story how their commanding general, who was a one-star general, did not have an infantry badge. And that's the blue wide badge that has an old musket on it. And a combat infantry badge is one of the things that you almost have to have to keep getting stepped up rank-wise. But he had made it to... he was either a full bird colonel or he was a brigadier general. I'm not sure which. But he wanted to have that combat infantry badge, and the only way is if you went out into the woods and had a firefight with the enemy. And so he took... my friend Mike was one of the people, even though he was a cook, he was one of the people under this guy's command. And he took everybody he had, and they went out, and they found a hill, and they shot at the hill and claimed they were in a firefight so he could get his combat infantry badge. Oh, me. There's been corruption for years. It's not new nowadays. It's just more pervasive, I'm afraid. Mike made it through Vietnam. He did have a bullet go real close to him while he was sleeping in his barracks in Saigon, but he made it without injury, and therefore did not get a Purple Heart. I'm glad that he made it. I had a few other friends that did. Well, I had one friend that lost both of his legs, and I had a couple of friends that didn't make it back. That's what war is all about. And we've been in wars for all, I think I read somewhere about a year ago, that we had been at war for all but 24 years of our history. And that doesn't really bode well for the civilization of the United States of America, or for that matter, for the civilization of the world. Civilization, that's another subject that maybe we'll talk about someday. It means you're civilized, you're civil to other people. And we really, as human beings, we really struggle to be truly civilized. being at the top of the food chain or the top of the intelligence chain, I guess it is, we don't really think we need to act civilly, I guess. We think we need to take over everything. At least there's a certain mindset that feels that way. And I wish that we could find a way to be pleasant to each other and allow each other their own way. Allow somebody to believe in their God. Allow somebody to follow their teachings. As long as you don't hurt somebody, including yourself, I think that's the way to live. Live and let live, I think, is a pretty good slogan. It doesn't mean you're not paying attention. You must pay attention. You must think critically and try to help your fellow man. That's what civilization is about, not trying to kill your fellow man or hold domain over your fellow man. Civilization is trying to help each other, trying to work as one, to be civilized. Well, anyway, it's been a long day of me carrying on here, and that's kind of what I do. And I hope you will listen to my show next week, Wednesday and Thursday, at about 12:15. Thanks a lot. Talk to you next week.
107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio, the place for all the big events. For Scott Spears and Terry Tackett at the 2016 World Series in Cleveland, Ohio, as the Cleveland Indians face the Chicago Cubs.
Now, how is this all going to end up? How many games are we going to play in this series?
I want to say six games. We're going to take.